This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the consequences of a nuclear deal with Iran. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Iran and six world powers have reached a historic deal capping nearly a decade of diplomacy that would curb Tehran's atomic program in return for sanctions relief. Under the agreement, reached after several missed deadlines, Iran accepted curbs on its nuclear program in exchange for a comprehensive lifting of sanctions imposed by the United Nations and by individual countries. Tehran also will subject its nuclear facilities to a more rigorous inspections regime.
This deal meets every single one of the bottom lines that we established when we achieved a framework earlier this spring. Every pathway to a nuclear weapon is cut off. And the inspection and transparency regime necessary to verify that objective will be put in place.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama speaking shortly after the deal was signed last week. The agreement represents a historic compromise after a 12-year standoff that has at times threatened to provoke a new conflict in the Middle East. It will take effect only after it clears several hurdles in Washington as well as Tehran. Conservatives in both capitals have fought against making the compromises needed to reach the agreement, but President Obama underscored that the P5 plus one and the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, are not naive and will be vigilant in enforcing the agreement.
This deal is not built on trust. It is built on verification.
The greatest hurdle will be the U.S. Congress, where Republicans have a majority and are expected to vote against the deal after a review period of up to 60 days. President Barack Obama is expected to veto any negative vote.
All of this will be memorialized and endorsed in a new United Nations Security Council resolution. And if Iran violates the deal, all these sanctions will snap back into place.
The news that major world powers in Iran reached a historic deal aimed at ensuring that Iran does not obtain the nuclear bomb was met with condemnation by the government of Israel, but hailed by the United Nations and Moscow, as well as many other nations from South Asia to Europe to Africa. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called the nuclear deal with Iran a mistake of historic proportions and vowed to keep up efforts to block the Islamic Republic from obtaining an atomic bomb. Iran's regional neighbors face a very different geopolitical future following the nuclear deal reached in Vienna. Many of Iran's rivals fear a warming relationship between Washington and Tehran. Meantime, President Obama must continue to reassure U.S. allies in Israel and the Gulf Cooperation Council that Washington will hold Iran accountable for fulfilling its commitments, particularly when the elimination of sanctions may provide the Islamic Republic with additional resources to support its destabilizing activities in the region. Well, for more on the merits and drawbacks and wider implications of the deal, we turn to two distinguished analysts for opposing views. Mark Dubowitz is executive director of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. That's a Washington-based nonpartisan policy institute. And Daryl Kimball. He's executive director of the Arms Control Association, and that's a nonprofit organization based in Washington that provides analysis on arms control and nonproliferation matters. Both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Carol, for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Well, Mark Dubowitz, let me begin with you. We understand that you're on the so-called opposing side of this deal. What is your reaction, and to what degree do you think this deal either prevents or possibly encourages a pathway to a nuclear-armed Iran?
Carol, I support a deal. I've always supported a deal with Iran. I just think this is a very deeply flawed deal. I think that the president is incorrect when saying that this deal prevents Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. As the president himself has acknowledged, that after 10 years, many of the restrictions are going to go away on this program. And so we bought ourselves 10 years. And I hope that those 10 years will lead to a transformation of this Iranian regime. But I think in the Middle East, it's always better to assume the worst and be surprised on the upside than to assume the best and have to face devastating consequences on the downside.
Turning to you, Daryl Kimball, for your perspective, to what degree do you think that the deal either prevents or potentially encourages in the long term a pathway to a nuclear-armed Iran?
Well, I mean, this agreement is much needed. Iran was on the path just a couple of years ago before the interim agreement in 2013 was reached to amass enough material for not just one nuclear weapon, but several. It also had a plutonium-producing reactor under construction. So it was a very dire non-proliferation situation. And these negotiations in this agreement have produced some very strong and solid and verifiable barriers for Iran to continue on that path. In fact, it draws down Iran's uranium enrichment capacity very, very substantially. It blocks the plutonium route. And as President Obama said, and as the IAEA Director General has said, it puts in place a layered, robust verification system that will make it extremely difficult for Iran to even consider trying to amass enough material for nuclear weapons. And it will also clear up past questions about its past experiments that everyone here in the United States and around the world believes were nuclear weapons related. So this is much needed, and it's actually a deal that will last longer than 10 years. The robust inspections regime will last forever.
Turning back to you, Mark Dubowitz, critics like yourself of the deal are very eloquent, make very good points, and I would probably submit that even President Obama would like a better deal, so to speak. But again, compromises always are the order of the day when you're dealing with two adversaries. Nonetheless, what is the alternative to this deal, Mark Dubowitz?
Well, the alternative is exactly what President Obama said for a number of years. He said no deal is better than a bad deal. And so I assume when President Obama said that over and over again, that he actually had alternatives to a deal. Those alternatives, I believe, included ratcheting up the sanctions pressure, having a credible threat of military force, sticking to longstanding U.S. demands that Iran's program be dismantled. And if President Obama actually didn't have an alternative when he was negotiating this deal, then that was an actually irresponsible negotiating position, because if you go into a negotiation without a better alternative to a negotiated agreement, then you're going to be taken to the cleaners by your negotiating partner. So I believe President Obama, when he said no deal is better than a bad deal, unfortunately, I think the administration has now pivoted it to a very fundamentally different position, which is that a bad deal is better than no deal.
You're characterizing it as a bad deal, but notwithstanding some points that President Obama would like to have perhaps gotten in this deal, he does think it's a good deal.
Carol, here's why it's a bad deal, and here's what Daryl's not telling you, is that the fundamental problem with this deal is that Iran actually doesn't have to cheat its way to a bomb. Iran can patiently walk its way to a bomb because most of the key restrictions on this nuclear program begin sunsetting or disappearing after year 10, and they begin to actually accelerate in terms of their disappearance after year 15. Iran actually emerges after 15 years with an industrial-sized nuclear program, widely dispersed on a territory more than twice the size of Texas, with near zero nuclear breakout, an easier clandestine sneakout, an intercontinental ballistic missile program, a powerful economy immunized against future economic pressure, and regional dominance. The fact is that we are delaying the inevitable. And the inevitable is a much more powerful nuclear threshold Iran. And the problem is that a future president in dealing with that will only have one option, and that is to use military force to forestall an Iranian nuclear breakout. President Obama says it's his deal or war. My concern is it's President Obama's deal and war.
Daryl Kimball, President Obama's deal and war, that we're delaying the inevitable.
Well, I think Mark is painting a more dire forecast than the details of the deal really suggest. I mean, if you take a close look at this, what it does is it says that Iran cannot exceed a certain capacity for enrichment of uranium beyond year 13. They would not be able to produce enough material for one bomb in any less than 12 months. Their path to the plutonium bomb is blocked permanently because the Arak heavy water reactor is going to be modified so that it can't produce enough plutonium for nuclear weapons. So the two main routes are blocked for a very long time. After year 13, the Iranians are still under very rigorous inspections. They also have to submit plans for their peaceful nuclear program, that is their uranium enrichment activity, to the IAEA. And the IAEA and the international community will continue to judge whether those plans are commensurate with their practical nuclear energy needs. In other words, if Iran decides in year 13 that they're going to build 20,000 advanced centrifuges, okay, which would far exceed their needs at the time, the international community is going to know there's a problem. And we will have all of the tools that we currently have in our toolkit available to put back into place, including the UN Security Council sanctions option. It would take time to put those back in place, but the international community would be behind us because Iran would be taking a path that clearly is in a different direction than they suggested they were going. We still have the military path, which is not a good one because it can only delay Iran's nuclear program and would lead to a wider Middle East war. So, you know, nothing in politics, international security is forever. And if the main complaint about this agreement is that it doesn't last forever and the restrictions, the severe restrictions on Iran's nuclear program don't last forever, you know, I would agree. I would like to see this last longer, but that does not make it a bad deal that should be rejected. We have to consider that without this agreement, we're looking at a situation in which Iran's program is not limited, they're closer to the bomb, the international sanctions coalition falls apart, and the risk of war comes now. So I see it a little differently. I think this is a strong deal on nonproliferation grounds, and it's something that we should embrace and go forward with.
Back to you, Mark Dubowitz. Daryl alluded to the regime itself. This is a repressive regime that backs terrorist groups from Hezbollah and its nefarious activities, whether in Lebanon or Syria. This, I think, is the crux of the problem, and it's hard to trust a regime of this nature. However, some say the deal is a potential game changer. Even President Obama admitted to that. This could be an opening, you know, a possibility for Iran to moderate over time. So not only from the nonproliferation point of view, but also for geopolitics, with the prospect of eventual sanctions relief once Iran complies on the nuclear agreement, we're in effect saying, that is the United States and the world community, that we want to ally ourselves with the people of Iran. And we know that the majority of Iranians are under 30 and very pro-American. And certainly we would like to encourage that. We want to court, you know, this population, which could potentially over time be friendly to us. So do you think with this deal, with all of its faults, we may be likely to render Iran more moderate rather than less moderate over the length of the deal?
Carol, that's certainly the hope. The bet is on the transformative impact of this deal. The problem with that is a massive cosmic bet. And yes, if the moderates of Iran, the young people of Iran, take over, then ultimately over time, it won't matter that it's going to be Iran with a threshold nuclear capability because it'll be a moderate Iran. But if the hard men of Iran continue to rule as they have for over three decades, and if the hard men of Iran who are going to be empowered by this deal, who are going to get hundreds of billions of dollars of relief in order to actually expand their nuclear program, expand their regional aggression, if they are still in power in a decade or a decade and a half, what we've done is emboldened the most dangerous elements of the Iranian regime. I hope Daryl's right. I hope President Obama is right. But when it comes to the Middle East, always better be pessimistic and be surprised on the upside rather than take cosmic bets and lead to devastating consequences.
Turning to you, Daryl Kemble, President Obama made it very clear that he is none too happy. In fact, he is extremely dismayed by Iran's activities in the region. It is a leading state sponsor of terrorism. But he said himself, he said that this deal cannot simply address this matter, that this is to address the nuclear issue, and that he says that containing Iran's nuclear program will still lessen its nefarious activities, at least over the next 10 to 15 years. Address that, as well as the potential for transformation over the next 10 to 15 years in a positive direction, or do you think that Mark is right, that we shouldn't really be betting on that?
I disagree with the idea that the president is betting that Iran is going to change over time. I think everybody here in the United States, including President Obama, I am, are pretty clear-eyed about the problems in Iran, their behavior. We got to remember, this is a nuclear deal. It is designed to prevent Iran from having the nuclear weapons capability. Mark talks about giving the hardliners the bomb or industrial capacity, ICBMs. That's not what this does. It doesn't give them that. The reality is that Iran today has and has had since 2007 an industrial capability to produce nuclear weapons. The task that we're all trying to deal with, and I think Mark would agree, is to prevent Iran from expanding that capability such that it can rapidly produce material for nuclear weapons and develop an ICBM, it does not have one now, that can carry such a weapon. So if there are benefits and side effects from this agreement, a more moderate Iranian social policies, human rights policies, that would be great. But that is not something that this deal is depending on. I personally don't think that this nuclear deal is going to change Iranian regional behavior very much. It could give moderates in Iran, however, the upper hand in the fight inside Iran between moderates, reformists, and hardliners. If we don't have this agreement, which President Rouhani has bet his presidency on, it surely will give the hardliners the upper hand. And I think we may then see a much more aggressive Iran with a much greater capability to pursue nuclear weapons.
So you're not worried about the big windfall, the $150 billion, that they're going to plow that into backing their nefarious activities, whether in Syria, perhaps some say they're backing the Houthis in Yemen and elsewhere.
They are helping terrorist organizations in the region. They could theoretically use some of the unfrozen assets that are their assets that have been locked up for arming those elements or buying weapons, but they could also use it for building up their domestic infrastructure, helping out with their economy, which is in bad shape because of the sanctions that have been placed. And we also have to remember, it's the UN Security Council mandated international sanctions that are going to be lifted when Iran meets its core nuclear obligations. That won't happen until sometime next year, and the international business community has to then calculate what the risks are for going in Iran, because they will know that if Iran violates its commitments, the sanctions will snap back in place immediately and they will be out of business. So I think the broader economic windfall for Iran may not happen for quite some time to come. And we also have to remember that U.S. sanctions on Iran's terrorism-related behavior, human rights behavior, and on entities in Iran are still in place, and that gives us very good tools to help try to manage Iran's activities and behavior.
Well, we'll have more on the consequences of the so-called windfall in just a minute, but first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Mark Dubowitz. He's Executive Director of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. That's a Washington-based nonpartisan policy institute. And Daryl Kimball, from whom you just heard, he's Executive Director of the Arms Control Association, a nonprofit organization providing analysis on arms control and nonproliferation matters. We're discussing the pros and cons of the historic deal reached by the P5+1 to curb Iran's nuclear program and the challenges ahead in the U.S. Congress and the region. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. Please connect with us on Facebook as well via Carol Castiel VOA, or send us an email to encounter@voanews.com. Here's a shout-out to a faithful listener and Facebook fan, Mercy Anyango Marunda from Nairobi, Kenya. Well, back to you, Mark Dubowitz, about the windfall. We know that our allies, from Israel in particular to the Gulf Arab states, are very concerned because there's no question that Iran is on the rise in the region and not necessarily doing good things. On the other hand, we do find ourselves somewhat on the same side with Iran vis-a-vis fighting the so-called Islamic State, ISIL. Others could argue that their very backing of Syria's Bashar al-Assad is fueling the rise of ISIL, and I think that's a valid argument. Nonetheless, take a look at the windfall again. Isn't it true, though, that President Obama is in the process of shoring up the allies, whether the Gulf states, saying that we are, that is the U.S., will be backing them, they will be on the lookout for the nefarious activities, and that because this is a nuclear deal, that does not constrain the United States from ramping up, whether militarily or providing all the safeguards that our allies need, from Israel to the Gulf states. So won't that mitigate to some extent Iran's activities in the region, if indeed that comes to pass?
Carol, this is not just a nuclear deal. What Daryl's not telling you is that we are actually, under this deal, going to be doing two things that are going to actually fuel Iranian aggression. The first is, in 5 years, this deal lifts the arms embargo on Iran. Iran, therefore, can buy heavy weaponry from Russia and China. It can rebuild its military. It could also take that advanced weaponry and it could send it to Bashar Assad. It could send it to its allies in Iraq, in Yemen, in Hezbollah and Hamas. Iran will emerge in 5 years with advanced heavy weaponry that it can use to continue its regional aggression. Number two, in 8 years, all of the ballistic missile restrictions that have been imposed by the United Nations and the European Union are going to go away. So Iran actually then will be able to access, not just from China, not just from Russia, but actually from Europe, the advanced technology it needs to build long-range ballistic missiles, including an intercontinental ballistic missile. That's a missile that actually only has one address on it, and that's the United States of America. So this is not just a nuclear deal. This is a deal that allows Iran to get an industrial-sized nuclear program with near-zero breakout. This is a deal also that will allow Iran to access advanced weaponry and build an ICBM program. That's the fundamental problem with this deal. And so, again, unless there is a very different Iranian regime in power in a decade to a decade and a half, this deal it has enabled is a powerful Iran on the nuclear, ballistic missile side, arms side, terrorism side, and economic side. And that is the Iranian regime we will have to deal with in a decade and a half. And the problem is, at that point, our options to actually stop Iran are going to be military options. And so this deal is enabling war. It's not preventing war.
But quickly to my question, in the meantime, I know 5 years is a very short period, but nonetheless, the United States has not reneged on its commitments to its allies in the region. The White House is in a position, as are other allies in the world, to shore up Israel, and has probably done so, as Obama has said, probably one of the strongest supporters of Israel and the government with respect to Iron Dome and so many other weapon systems. So isn't that going to push back on Iran should they decide to ramp up these nefarious activities?
Carol, the problem is the White House claims they haven't reneged on our commitments to our Israeli and Arab allies. But when you go to the region and you actually speak to people there, the perception is very different. They feel abandoned. And the problem is when you abandon allies, allies go off in their own different directions. And we've seen that with the Saudis. The Saudis have been very vocal in making it very clear that they too will have a nuclear infrastructure and they will match Iran's nuclear infrastructure. So rather than actually preventing nuclear proliferation in the Middle East, you actually are enabling it. Problem also with respect to the sectarian bloodshed of the Middle East, the Saudis' response to the perception that we're abandoning them is to fan the flames of sectarian warfare. So now you have a sectarian war between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And the problem with that actually fuels the conditions for ISIS. ISIS is actually the great winner of this deal because Sunni Arabs in Iraq and in Syria feel abandoned by the West. They have no moderate alternative, and they are turning to ISIS in response to Iranian aggression. So sectarian war in the Middle East, hundreds of billions of dollars to spend on arms and terrorism. Carol, that doesn't sound like a Middle East that's going to be peaceful and stable for our children and grandchildren.
All right, Daryl Kimball, for your response.
There are several things that Mark just talked about that I think are just counterintuitive. First of all, this agreement with respect to ballistic missile restrictions that were part of the UN Security Council resolutions and the heavy arms embargo, you could say that these are being lifted. They will be lifted in 5 years, in 8 years. You could also say they're being extended. And they are being extended to 5 years and 8 years. In these negotiations, the United States wanted to extend those restrictions as long as possible. We were up against the Chinese, the Russians, and the Iranians, who wanted them lifted immediately. John Kerry held out for several days. This is one of the reasons why the talks lasted longer. And we're not enabling Iran to have a ICBM. There will continue to be efforts that the international community has been involved in for years to prevent the proliferation of the technologies necessary to build ballistic missiles and carry nuclear warheads. That will continue. And the Russians and the Chinese are going to be part of that. So to say that we're enabling the Iranians to have this, I just think is incorrect. On the issue of Iran's Arab neighbors now going to suddenly try to match Iran in its nuclear program, and are they going to be a turn of the screw away from nuclear weapons? I think that is extremely far-fetched. The Saudis are fundamentally concerned about the regional balance between themselves and Iran. They are privately and publicly pleased with this nuclear deal because it is holding the Iranians back from the point where they could have nuclear weapons. The Saudis are not in a good position to pursue nuclear weapons. They know that they would pay a very heavy price, just like the Iranians have paid, if they were even to go down that path. And so what we fundamentally also have to remember is that Mark is talking about the problems we may face down the road, and he's painting a very dire picture that I think is incorrect. What we also have to consider is what is the situation we face right now? And what many critics of this agreement are suggesting, including Prime Minister Netanyahu, many members of the U.S. Congress, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, is that the agreement should be disapproved by Congress, that the United States should go back to our allies, try to put tougher sanctions in place, and ask the Iranians to sit down at the table again and agree to better terms because the Congress doesn't think this is good enough. Now, that is not a plausible theory for U.S. policy moving ahead. The reality is that the allies support this. Foreign Secretary Hammond in Jerusalem argued
Foreign Secretary of the UK
vociferously with Prime Minister Netanyahu about the deal. They are not going to be pleased if the U.S. Congress walks away. The sanctions regime would, I think, evaporate if the Congress rejects this. The Iranians are not going to come back to the negotiating table. The limits on their program are going to be gone. They're going to be racing towards a capability that will enable them to have nuclear weapons in very short order. That is a situation I don't want us to go in. I would like to see a better deal, but this is the deal we have, and I think it's a very strong deal, and it's going to be effective for a long, long time.
President Obama has vowed that if the deal is voted down, he will veto that. But we will see in the days ahead, and we will bring you both back, hopefully, for more discussions on this very important issue. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Mark Dubowitz, Executive Director director of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and Daryl Kimball, executive director of the Arms Control Association. Thanks to both of you for your terrific insights.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Jackson Witt, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another encounter on The Voice of America.